Hi everyone, it's Judy. Welcome back to the On Track podcast. Today I'm joined with my dear friend and colleague, Ben Jordan, and we do really what's like a year-end wrap. We talk about routing engines, we talk about RF, microwave, and high-speed design and how they differ. We talk about signal integrity, and also we talk about what design holds for 2020 and beyond. I think you're going to enjoy it. Lastly, we share some resources and links that we hope will be our holiday gift to you. So lean in and enjoy. We'll see you on the other side. Welcome to Altium's On Track podcast, where we talk to leaders about PCB design, tackling subjects ranging from schematic capture all the way to the manufacturing floor. I'm your host, Judy Warner. Please listen in every week and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all your favorite podcast apps. And be sure to check out the show notes at altium.com/podcast, where you can find great resources and multiple ways to connect with us on social media. Well, Ben, welcome back. It's been a long time since we've been in the yellow chairs. I've missed having you, and I'm excited to do a podcast with you today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Judy. It's always fun doing this.
Yes, it's fun for me as well.
It has been a while.
So today I thought we would just jump around, sort of cover, you know, what's going on here, what's going on in the PCB community at large, and just sort of do like a news update.
Right? Yeah,
what's going on? So starting out with Altium Designer 20, we released that very recently, and it seems to be getting good response. And one of the hottest, most well-received features really seems to be the routing feature, and specifically the any angle routing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as we've just chatted here around the office, you had told me something interesting, is that something about why we've always, as CAD tool manufacturers across the board, seem to stick with 45 and 90 degree angles. Why hasn't anybody gone to this any angle before? And you have some background on that. So
I think it's not for lack of attempts at it. There have been other CAD tools since Windows. There have been one or two CAD tools that I've seen that could do any angle. And technically, Altium Designer, you could put a trace at any angle. There wasn't a restriction.
You just had to do a lot of clicks.
It's just that people don't. Yeah, you had to do a lot of clicks to do it.
Right.
And people wouldn't use that in general. They would almost always interactively route a board using the 90 and 45, you know, orthogonal and 45 degree angled traces. And some time ago, I started asking people, why do we do that? Because it's not for lack of computing power. Maybe in the very early days of CAD, you know, back when it was, you know, DAISY and systems like that used a mini computer or a dedicated workstation, mm-hmm. the computing power might have been easier to do traces at 90s and 45s. I don't know. But I remember asking Charles File about this when he was here, mm-hmm. And saying, why don't we? Because what actually inspired that question when I was talking to Charles was I have collected a few. Call me weird, but I'm kind of like, I am an engineer and a bit of a nerd, right? So I've collected some Japanese service manuals for some audio gear that I've owned over the years, like guitar effects units and things like this. I have a service manual, for example, for a Roland GP8, which is a very well-known guitar processor from the 80s. And I had one for a while and it needed repairing, so I got a service manual. So I have another one for a Nakamichi cassette player, of all things. I don't even own a Nakamichi. I've never owned a Nakamichi cassette player. Somehow I ended up with a service manual. Maybe I may have repaired one for a friend back like years ago. But I look through this documentation of these Japanese service manuals in English, and they have the most beautiful exploded view diagrams and assembly drawings and bills of materials that are extremely thorough and detailed, hundreds and hundreds of components listed. And they show the printed circuit board and where everything's laid out. So of course you need that information if you're repairing something on a bench.
Right.
And I note that all of these products, even from the mid to late 80s, they were using beautiful arced curved traces everywhere. I'm sure the PCBs were designed with tape and mylar because that's what they looked like. And mm-hmm. they were just super elegant and nice. Mm-hmm. And it got me thinking, like, why don't we design boards like that in CAD? I mean, we have the computing power to do mm-hmm. it. And Charles, I asked him at lunch one day and he said, because you can't edit it once you've laid it down. I'm thinking, maybe that's true. It's if you place a bunch of tracks at different angles things and you need to push and shove something out of the way a little bit, mm-hmm. you basically have to tear it all up and start again.
I see.
And that's the real crux of it.
Huh.
So I think where we've lacked computing power until now is in the ability to push and shove things in a meaningful way at any angle after having had any angle routing done on the board. Hmm. And that's the key update to Altium Designer 20 that makes it possible. Now we can have beautiful flowing traces with tangential arcs, tangential to the trace they come off, and concentric with the object they're clearing.
Mm-hmm.
That was another funny argument we had in the office. Some of us in marketing were saying, oh, it's any angle with tangential arcs, because you draw a trace and an arc comes off it at a tangent and it's neat and tidy.
Right.
And someone in R&D was saying, it's not tangential, it's concentric. But what they were referring to is the clearance from the object that it's going around.
Oh,
maybe another BGA ball.
Right.
Or a via that's already on the board. So,
right.
But the real key is, yeah, it's easy to do that routing now with a new trace that you're laying down.
Mm-hmm.
But the real value is in being able to edit it after it's laid down and being mm-hmm. able to push things and shove them in a meaningful way
mm-hmm.
without messing up the whole design.
Mm-hmm. Now, do I understand right that part of what enables that is really that we've completely rebuilt the routing engine over the last several years? It's not like this year.
It's a couple of things. It takes a lot of time and groundwork to build the algorithms mm-hmm. needed to be able to do things elegantly.
Mm-hmm.
And some people who design hardware who have more a computer engineering background like me, I get it because I used to write software.
Right.
And a lot of electrical engineers who use Altium Designer day by day also write software. And those mm-hmm. people who do that would have a fairly good understanding how much effort is required to manipulate graphic objects. It takes a lot of math and testing and time to build libraries to make these things happen. So, mm-hmm. you know, some people say, why has it been so long?
Right.
Two things. One, it just takes time. And two is we had to hire, we've enlarged our technical resources. We've made some very strategic hiring in our R&D team in particular. And we've actually built a dedicated team for routing since Charles joined uh-huh. Altium uh-huh. a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
That's when it started. We uh-huh. started hiring people who had previous experience in auto router development and in topological algorithms. And we've managed to hire some of the right people, which is difficult to do, right?
In this
industry, it's very niche.
Very niche, right.
Yeah, so we've hired a group and they're really good and they're running full steam now. So
yeah.
I'm excited by what 2020 is going to bring in the next decade, because we're going to see that leap forward,
right,
with some pretty significant power coming
right.
up.
Yeah.
I'm expecting a lot of these guys because they're brilliant, they're geniuses, And so we have that. We've some of the other things, since you're on the topic of 80/20 and what's new, we've and again, groundwork is the key here. We've also hired a dedicated team just for simulation, because this is one area that that Altium Designer has had built in circuit simulation since before I started working at Altium. Mm-hmm. We even in the 90s had a product called Advanced Sim that was part of the overall unified bundle.
Uh-huh.
It came with Protel, and it was a great simulator that was based on Georgia Tech XSPICE, and we had some signal integrity capabilities as well in Altium Designer. It's been there the whole time, but
I've not heard that it's just a really strong simulator. So
well that's just it. It hasn't had the love and care.
Oh, I see.
That maybe
so
we
it hasn't been updated.
Or at the same time, we interviewed a lot of customers, and a lot of them said, well, we never even used the simulator. We didn't hardly know it was there.
Oh.
So either it's my fault for not marketing it enough, or people don't need it. But I think in more recent customer surveys, we've seen a lot more requests for simulation. Both circuit simulation and signal integrity are really important now, mm-hmm. because you're not going to do any new product development and be really innovative and save money and time without a simulator.
Right.
The only other way to do it is you build it and measure it and see if it works. And there's too many variables in modern designs.
Right.
So the other big news was there's no real apparent change to the user interface in circuit simulation in 80/20, but there is massive change in that the whole engine was replaced with a much newer variant of XSPICE, a derived variant of XSPICE is NGSPICE, and a lot of the other simulators used separately out in the world, like ones that you can download for free from certain semiconductor manufacturers, for example, are based on the same engine, uh-huh. because it's solid and it's really fast.
Uh-huh.
And so now you have that in Altium Designer still, but it's you don't have to leave the comfort of the schematic environment that you know. And so you can save time. But the simulation's very fast. But what that does, again, it's an effort, it's a platform effort where we're building the foundation to support something much weightier and more capable. So mm-hmm. I don't know for sure yet, and there's nothing I can publicly yeah. promise, of course, but I believe one of the themes, if not the theme, one of the themes of the next major release will be, you know, virtual prototyping, simulation, that kind of thing, making sure things work before you go to the cost of building one.
Mm-hmm. Very exciting to, you know that I've been hoping for this for a while. Since I arrived here, two areas, you know, of course, high-speed digital and the RF and microwave market also are two areas. And with IoT exploding, you know, all the new startups, or not all of them, but many new startups are IoT related.
Yep.
And they're going to need that capability.
They will. And what that means is people who previously, like me, were digital only, let's
right.
say. You know, my specialty was out of college, out of university. My final project was in digital signal processing. So I was all about writing C code and digital electronics.
Right.
And I look at all the young people entering the industry now with startups and,
right.
and developing new products.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing that stuff, but they're also having to deal with Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and low power. How far can you communicate between nodes with as little power as possible? So I look at companies like, you know, Particle and Espressif and others are coming out with modules and microprocessors that have analog bits built in, but right. what it means for you, what it means for me as a board designer is you can't get away with just doing things assuming it's all digital anymore. Even right. if and even right. even if it is, it's you're dealing with such high edge rates now and high speed that yep. we talk to other friends in the field who are experts in RF, and they're coming around to admit that digital is RF and RF is digital if you look at it in the right angle.
Yep. Which is, I'm not smart enough to like understand how, I mean, I get how the lines are blurred, but.
But what does this mean for the coming year or two of yeah. anyone in yeah. our industry designing boards? Yeah. What are you going to have to learn?
Yes. And I think that's what's interesting to me is, you know, I think to your point that more people are asking about simulation tools. I think people are being drugged into RF.
Or drugged into it.
Yeah, maybe. And it's a whole different world, and there are things that you're going to need to learn and know, yeah. which is a good segue to talk about a very fun talk that you gave at PCB West this year. So, yeah. Oh my gosh, to our audience, I don't know, I had about 5 or 6 years where I was heavily into RF and microwave boards, and I had to learn a lot. It was like drinking from the fire hose, and it was not the same as making, you know, digital and analog boards. So I had to learn a lot.
You followed the white rabbit.
I did. Deep hole, and I was down there, and it was dark for a long time, but I luckily had a lot of great mentors that taught me, and I learned a lot, and I always appreciated this. I think it was Dale Doyle at Rogers that said, you know, making RF and microwave bare boards is that they're not always complex, but they're difficult. Right. And it yeah. just has to do with geometries and yep. copper roughness and all these variables that come into play. And it might be a 2-layer board or a 4-layer board. They're not 18-layer, 30-layer boards. So they're yeah. not complex, but they're difficult.
So I'd say the complexity is not in the manufacturing of the board. Other than tolerances, you want very tight tolerances.
Right.
Because you have to comply with FCC rules and regulations, and you don't want to be 1 ounce out of the bandwidth that you should be
no.
radiating at, for example.
And then you're putting it
but
in
the complexity is in the design.
It's in the design, but yeah. it also, you know, one thing that was crazy to me is that at the time, myself as a board manufacturer, I could build a board 100%. Inside IPC spec, send it to the designer, and it would be trash because our etching, it may have been within IPC mm-hmm. tolerance for etching.
Right.
But it undercut, or the trapezoid was too wide at the base, or the copper was too rough on the bottom side, or the skin effect, or
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah.
And so we'd have to start over.
Yeah.
And yeah, so
it's really tough.
I had no idea. So it was kind of going down that rabbit hole. I came to appreciate what a hard job that was because there's so many variables in the design process and so many things you need to think about. Yeah. And so I had a great time watching Ben decide that he wanted to go down this rabbit hole from a design standpoint to prepare to give a talk at PCB West. And I would walk by Ben's desk, and all of a sudden it looked like he was going to school. There'd be a stack oh, yeah. of these hardbound books that yep. looked like...
I've been consuming a lot of...
oh my goodness.
And there's a lot of good resources out there. There are some of those books are so specialized. They're very pricey and hard to find. One of them... is a well-known book that even Rick Hartley used when uh-huh. he was diving into this stuff. And I thought, well, if one of our industry mentors, if it's good enough for him, it's good enough for me. So I went and found the book, but I could only get it secondhand. And even secondhand, it was something like $160 US to buy a copy. It was Brian Waddell's book on transmission line design. It's the transmission line design handbook. Uh-huh. And it's so packed with any kind of structure you may want to make using uh-huh. copper on a circuit board and all the math involved in producing it. And even then, everything I read, every single chapter maybe references 20 or 30 other academic papers. And some of them I've gone to find, you know, an IEEE Explorer and other places like this uh-huh. that... It sure is a rabbit hole. Once you start reading one thing, it leads to others and leads to others. But eventually, at some point, you realize there's also a practical side to all of this. Mm-hmm. And it can be learned without tons of heartache. And so my goal was to put together a class that shows people you can start. Don't get paralyzed. Like for years, right. I was paralyzed about this, thinking that's impossible. That's for specialists who have PhDs. Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to keep going down the rabbit hole, you'll probably find yourself doing that right. eventually.
Right.
And there's some really amazing materials now, even mm-hmm. on YouTube. I want to give a shout out to this guy. He's a professor of computational electromagnetics at the University of El Paso, Texas. His name is Rumpf, Dr. Rumpf. Mm-hmm. He has some pretty fantastic tools that he himself developed for his classes, where he creates these presentations where he allows you to somehow visualize.
I know who you're talking about. And he makes physics visible, right?
Yes.
And he's fascinating to watch.
And what his lectures made me realize was, hang on a sec, I'm visualizing electromagnetics all day, every day anyway. It's light.
Right.
And that's way up in the
right
in the spectrum at super high frequencies, right? But not SHF, so above SHF.
Yeah.
But anyway, my point was, don't get paralyzed and not give it a go. This is one of those things you've got to do study, yes, but you also need to make a start and build some things and measure them. And that's what my course was about.
So, as I said, I watched Ben go down the rabbit hole, watch these books. I drug some old bare boards that I had in my drawer out for show and tell, and we would geek out about it every once in a while. But what I loved is, as you told me, that your motivation was to kind of distill this down so it wasn't so intimidating. And then you entitled the talk The
Absolute Beginner's Guide
to RF design, which I think made the course approachable as well. And to Ben's credit, it was very well received at PCB West. So now you are presenting it where again?
Yeah, I got some really good solid feedback from my attendees at PCB West. And up front, I was very honest with them. I said, this is the first time and you're all guinea pigs and I really need your feedback to improve this. And some of them gave me some pretty candid pointers, which was good. Great. One of the problems was I was terrified of not having enough material for them, and I actually had way too much. And so a 3.5-hour class isn't enough, really. And I'm going to do the same thing at DesignCon in mm-hmm. January in San Jose, California, IPC Apex Expo in San Diego here mm-hmm. in February, but this time I get to do it with some refinements. So I'm going to skip some of the theory I talked about up front. I will still give a light introduction to some of that, mm-hmm. but cut more to the chase of showing a practical introduction to what are all the shapes you see on those. Every PCB designer who has not yet done an RF board will pick up an RF board at a trade show and go, oh, this just looks like black magic.
Yep.
Because you see the board, you see all these funny shapes and mm-hmm. precise transmission lines and curves and chamfered corners and
yep.
hairpin hairpins.
They're kind of cool to look at. I think they're sort of...
And you're like, I know that does something.
Yes.
But I don't know what. And yeah. It just seems like a mystery mm-hmm. how someone would even come up with that. And so I will be discussing what all those different shapes are, what to call them, and how to design them, and what are the issues with materials that you've got to look out for, surface finishes, what are the main characteristics you want to look for and uh-huh. spec out when you're uh-huh. designing a RF or microwave PCB. And we'll talk about some of the tools RF engineers use to design those shapes and how you can quickly and easily create them. It's not going to be Altium designer-centric at DesignCon because it's not allowed to be, and that's we'll talk about that in our videos on our website right. later on. But
right.
But in the meantime, it's for anyone using any, it's CAD agnostic, but using any tool who wants to get started with and be able to converse about
right.
RF and microwave PCBs.
Well, I so appreciate that you did this class because it's needed because the explosion of IoT and our tool is moving in a lovely way towards SI and giving enabling features for more RF and microwave. So I really appreciate you doing this. And then, you know, I sort of, when I had left the industry for a while and I came back and I jumped into RF and microwave. And so I realized that RF engineers could have a PhD in microwave theory or whatever. They were brilliant people, but they didn't know how to design a board, but they were being required to. So mm-hmm. I wrote this, I mean, it was an absolute primer on how to build and design a PCB. I mean, it to me, it felt like ridiculously simplistic, but it got picked up as a blog by Microwave Journal, which yep. I'm like,
and those articles are still incredibly
still
valuable
there, and they're goofy.
If we could poach your articles and put them on the Altium website, we would, but that's obviously, it's not our
so
copyrighted it's, material. But
those it ended up being there for 3 years. And like I said, primer. And I was taking knowledge from brilliant yeah. people, distilling it into plain English. And it took. People really appreciated knowing sort of the ABCs.
Yeah.
So I love that you're basically doing that on the design side, but in a much more technically rich
Again, going back to IoT, you brought up IoT, and I notice all these people, younger people in the industry, having to, normally they're writing C code for a microcontroller, and they happen to design the board that microcontroller's
yes.
on.
Yes.
But now they need some wireless connectivity, and they're like,
yeah.
Where do I start? How do I make sure it's only going to receive the frequencies
right.
I want? And can I use a PCB filter to do that? Well, yes, you can. And there's ways
mm-hmm.
of doing these mm-hmm. things. So, but it's scary if you've never done it. So I want to, I'm sort of going through the pain myself as it were to,
so you can hand
it
off.
I can
yeah.
lead others.
Yes.
With less
stress. I really
stress.
Understand this because I've been down a similar road, just not as rich technically, where I took brilliant people's information, distilled it so it was accessible, you know, by designers. So
yeah.
I love that you're doing this. And so for our listeners, DesignCon is January 28th through 30th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Always a great show. If you're anywhere near that, I highly recommend it. Covers not only board technologies, but also chip level technologies. And they have a really robust, I mean, every top name in the industry is there teaching. They have a very robust conference. They also have an exhibition area where there will be, you know, people on the floor showing their wares, so to speak. And so a great learning opportunity there. IPC Apex will be February 4th through 6th. Here in beautiful, sunny San Diego. They're only a week apart, which is unfortunate. And we've kind of had this overlap the last couple of years with these two shows.
Yeah, last year they were on at the same time.
They were on the same week. So we won't have that problem.
Yep.
So IPC Apex also has a very large number of classes that you can take. And so that is February 4th through 6th, San Diego Convention Center. And you can go see Ben Jordan talk about RF. Now, one thing you and I talked about, and I just want to sit back here and learn, you know, at the feet of the almighty Ben Jordan. But this was an area that I need some education on, and I thought it'd be interesting to our listeners, because I've had Lee Ritchie, like, correct me on this, which is a little embarrassing. But so when we talk about RF and microwave, they are not high speed. They are high frequency, typically.
Yep.
And then there's high speed digital. But then the high speed, the RF people are starting to say, well, now high speed digital is coming into the RF. And I'm like, well, no. So talk about frequency and hertz and right. What's high performance and what's high speed, what's high frequency, and what's the difference between all of these?
High performance, I want to slay that dragon real quick because, you know, high performance can mean a lot of different things. And when a lot of people in our industry or people who think about maybe they're not directly involved in circuit design, right? But they might be associated with our with technology, and that you say high performance to them, they may think of a fast sports car. Somehow speed always comes into high performance, even though that's not what the phrase actually means. High performance means it does its job exceptionally well.
Right.
And that could just be an indicator light, like an LED that's going to last a long time, or like the top of a tower has to have these special light bulbs because they don't want to have, it costs a lot of money to change the light bulb. Someone has to climb up and be all harnessed in with safety ropes, and it's crazy. Sometimes they use a helicopter to do it. It's so ridiculous. Crazy. So you want to put a high performance light bulb in that job.
Right.
So high performance can mean so many different things, but when we talk about this seemingly age-old argument between high-speed digital and RF,
yes,
and saying they're not the same, well, it does boil down to frequency in a current technology. So I just put together a computer. It's kind of a Christmas present to myself. but it's using one of the newer AMD cores, a nice new motherboard and new graphics card and lots of memory and all that. Well, these things are all digital. They're all digital electronics, but the signals we're dealing with now, they're very high speed digital, and they need length tuning, impedance control, you've got to limit the number of vias, the boards. The DDR4 memories have blind and buried vias, so you don't have via stubs. And all of this is to enable the signal integrity to be able to push the computing. So this comes back to that high-performance computing is what people think of now, right? To push the envelope. So those signals are going between the CPU and the DDR4 memory module, for example, at incredibly high speeds. So you have the speed of the signal as it traverses the board. And by high speed, we mean we are using a high clock rate. So we're sending more bits in less time, more bits of information in sequence traveling along the board in less time. The actual speed of the signal in a PCB, whether I flip a switch to turn a light on and leave it, or I'm flipping the switch on and off really, really fast to send a clock signal to some device at 3.4 gigahertz. And this is where frequency comes in. And that's like people are thinking of clock speeds when they think of high speed, because on a computer motherboard, you have a clock speed and it's one of the primary specifications. Oh, how fast is your computer? Oh, well, this AMD Ryzen 7 CPU will overclock to 4.3 gigahertz. That's insane. Insane. But 4.3 gigahertz as a sine wave is a microwave frequency. Microwaves are from one-ish gigahertz up to a few hundred. The classical definition on the FCC spectrum charts,
yes,
we say 3 gigahertz to 300 gigahertz,
mm-hmm,
are all the microwave bands. And so you're telling me my computer motherboard is a microwave board? Well, it's carrying microwave, it's carrying signals that have very high edge rates in the microwave with frequency components, because even a digital signal is made up of sine waves added together. It's called the superposition theory, and all the engineers in the audience know this. They know about the Fourier series and, uh-huh, Fourier transforms and Fourier analysis of signals. And Rick Hartley speaks about this too. There's all these frequency components that make up a digital signal.
Uh-huh.
And those are all well into the microwave ranges.
Uh-huh.
And so you're not designing the board as a microwave board, because the PCB signal traces on a digital board, their job isn't to filter microwave frequencies and limit the bandwidth. And their job is not to be an antenna.
Right.
Their job is, right, to avoid those two things.
Right.
It's to enable the signal to go between the CPU and the RAM, say.
Right. Mm-hmm.
At as fast a frequency, at a faster rate as, mm-hmm, you can, with minimal signal degradation. But what that means is you have to understand what PCB physical structures will interfere with and degrade that signal's path as it travels down that road.
Right.
And so it is, from that point of view, you are dealing with microwaves, and you have to understand a stub is going to have a resonant frequency and is going to kill your signal at that resonant frequency if it's a shorting stub or an opening stub, or, mm-hmm, it will create reflections,
mm-hmm,
at a particular frequency. And, mm-hmm, that causes signal integrity issues on a digital board. Well, on a microwave board, you're aware of maintaining impedance and signal integrity in the same way. Only now you're actually going to do things deliberately to,
right,
limit the bandwidth of the frequency, because you only want that narrow band,
right,
of frequencies going through.
Right.
So you're going to deliberately put a stub in, or a series of stubs, or a bunch of hairpin segments to create a band pass filter and say, I only want these frequencies to pass, because that's all we're allowed to transmit from,
right,
this class of device and with our license,
right,
that we have for transmission.
Interesting.
So, and then you're going to deliberately, in some cases on the PCB, in some cases you go out to a cable to an antenna, but for Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and other low power systems, you put the antenna on the PCB because it's easy to do it.
Uh-huh.
It's convenient and it saves space, and you don't need another connector and cable, which is all lossy anyway. You just put your antenna on the board and then transmit through the air. So the subtle difference is it's kind of like when you take an image in Photoshop and you use that tool that makes it inverted, and all the colors go to their opposite color.
Oh,
And you make a negative.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But the information is still there. To me, it's kind of like that. With a high-speed digital board, you have to be aware of, and you're dealing with these microwave frequencies now. But there you're trying to avoid signal degradation. And in microwave and RF PCB design, you're aware of the same microwave frequencies, but there you're deliberately controlling those,
mm-hmm,
using PCB shapes and structures. And so In both cases, you don't want a via in the wrong place.
Right.
You don't want a stub in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just taking a signal from a chip to an antenna, there may be very little that you want to do with that routing on the board. You mm-hmm. might want to just, but in both cases, you're maintaining the correct impedance. And right. the impedance calculation is done the same way in the layer stack manager with a field solver.
Yep.
Or with a well-known formula in it and your calculator, if you want to do it that way. And materials behave the same in both cases.
Yep.
Still get loss, still yep. get...
You still have to calculate all that in.
Yep.
Interesting. Well, thank you for solving that, because that's one thing that I'm like, was never clear to me, but that makes sense, that you're trying to actually contain within a certain frequency range or, you know, bandwidth or whatever. So that's great. Thank you. Well, you just mentioned field solver, which makes me think about a recent formal partnership that we formed with a company called Symbarian. And we had struck a partner, an informal partnership with them going into Altium Designer 19. But as we moved into 20, we formed a formal partnership, and they have field solver technology.
Yep.
And can you talk about what that is, how that's sort of impacting, you know, where we are yes. today in Altium Designer? Because I think I'm excited about this.
And today. Actually, the CEO and founder of that company, Symbarian, is a genius PhD. He is one of those PhD guys.
Yes.
Spent his life diving into computational electromagnetics for the purpose of solving signal integrity problems
yeah.
and being able to simulate PCB traces. So that what came in 19 with that partnership was they baked their static field solver
mm-hmm.
into our layer stack manager for Altium Designer 19. So that finally gave people a very accurate tool for taking into consideration all the materials in the layer stack up and the way boards are made, and generating a very accurate impedance profile for mm-hmm. the traces in the board. And that works whether it's a high-speed digital board or an RF board, and you're doing microstrip transmission lines over Rogers material on your outer layers, which is a common way of doing it, right?
Yeah.
So it'll calculate those impedances very accurately and allow you to drive design rules for trace width based on that. So a couple of things were missing. So in 20, they added more to it, and that's for, so previously it would do microstrip and strip line and offset strip line traces and differential pairs, and they added a new capability in 20, and I'm just trying to remember which one it was.
It was the tune for delay, right?
That also was added, yes. Offset strip line is...
Oh, you're saying the circuit
offset
structure.
Coupling.
Okay.
Offset coupling,
okay.
Okay. Some additional capabilities have been added in mm-hmm. terms of creating impedance profiles for more new structures. But yes, to your point, the tune for delay we added into our design rules, but the actual delay calculation comes from the Symbior or Symbarian's static field solver. It can calculate very accurately the picosecond signal edge rates based on the structures in the PCB.
I thought it was interesting when we were at Altium Live that Rick Hartley, when he was giving his keynote in Frankfurt, said, "I'm so happy to see Altium doing tune for delay, because that's the right way to do it yeah. rather than length tuning." I'm like, wow, well, that was big praise.
Well, that's another kind of interesting eye-opening point about this, is that you get to see really what distance actually means in a modern PCB. I remember even in the early days when I first started working at Altium, I would see customer designs where they'd gone to great lengths They'd gone
pun intended,
great lengths to manually add extra trace lengths to tune things.
Yeah.
And it was, and they just took up board real estate and made their jobs harder to mm-hmm. finish the board when it was completely unnecessary, because they'd have a microcontroller and a memory, say, SDR memory, not even DDR, running at 130 megahertz. And their length tuning between an FPGA and a SDRAM chip right next to each other on the board, and they're trying to length tune, and it's like 130 megahertz clock rate. Do you realize where the clock edge, you want the clock edge to be approximately in the middle of your signal transitions.
Uh-huh.
Do you realize how much time and therefore length you have on either side of that clock edge? It's several inches. Like, this does not need tuning.
Right, right.
But people were still wanting to do it because they saw it on motherboards they'd bought, and
right.
they were like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. Oh,
right.
I've got a, or engineers mm-hmm. who would design the electronics and wire up the schematic, but wouldn't do the board layout,
mm-hmm.
would specify it because they're like, that seems pretty fast, so I think we should probably length tune. But without actually doing the math and saying, well, you know, a typical FR4 PCB there was like, you know, many picoseconds per inch. I think, I don't remember off the top of
right.
my head. Something
right,
like
right.
15, 16 picoseconds
right.
per inch. And you're not dealing in picoseconds at
right.
100 megahertz.
Right.
So it's been a while, and thanks to people like Rick and Lee training the industry, we've got a much clearer understanding
mm-hmm.
that when to tune and when not to tune, when
right.
to make your job harder, when to give yourself some slack and just do it, do
right.
easy routing.
Right, exactly. Well,
but the tune for delay will tell you, and if you're doing something at three or four gigahertz, yeah,
uh-huh.
it's meaningful. So
right
at that point.
Yeah. Well, I also just learned something. We were talking to David Habuda upstairs, who's part of the product team, that said we have a now, you know, as we moved into these sort of into this partnership and putting some of these features in our tool, that we actually have a dedicated development team for simulation.
Yeah.
Wowzers.
So I mentioned the routing one before. We've got dedicated team for simulation, which is the team, their first job as new hires was to replace the old tired
mm-hmm.
X-Spice sim engine with the new NG-Spice one. They've done that. So that paves the way for future capabilities in the, especially in the user interface.
Mm-hmm.
And wave editors and things, we should see some new things coming for there. So we've got that. We've also got dedicated team. So I mentioned sim and routing. We've got a dedicated team for schematic, and the fruits of their labors are starting to show now with AD20 as well, with
mm-hmm.
the new dynamic compilation. You don't have to compile your design anymore. It automatically does it behind
right.
the scenes. And there's been a number of performance improvements in the schematic editor as a result. So it's faster and more responsive in many ways.
Yeah.
So another part of that was moving away from the old Windows GDI, which is the old way of doing graphics in Windows, which is now, you know, it's like 30 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, it had been maintained all this time, but there was no acceleration. So the new schematic as of 20 is all based on DirectX, which again gives us capabilities and a platform for the future, because DirectX is, as people know, was developed for gaming and is one of the two main sort of ways of doing hardware acceleration with graphics cards
mm-hmm.
and GPU power. So having it based on DirectX is going to make it a lot more powerful for doing
right.
big. There's some designs you have hundreds of, you might have 100 sheets, not hundreds, but you might have a very large design if you're doing a motherboard or a backplane or something, and this is the only way to move forward.
It's very exciting. I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but one of our users who's doing some military stuff, so I can't mention their name or the company, 127 schematic sheets.
Yeah, so they are up there in the hundreds.
Oh, that's a big design. Yeah, and it's really cutting edge military stuff. So, but I was like, how do you even manage that? And someone that knows this person called me and said, they're breaking all day designer. I'm like, no, she's not. Okay, so so exciting things ahead anyways.
Yeah, definitely.
For simulation and some of these areas. And I'm really excited where we get to go. Not only where we are now, but where we're going in the future.
Yep.
So trivia question for our listeners. Let's see if you can get this right. We're going to tell you the answer. But Ben ran this one by me upstairs, so I know the answer. He was saying, what is the lowest loss medium? Anybody? I guessed air, and I thought I was so smart for knowing that, but I didn't know it. So
very close. It's almost the lowest loss. The lowest loss is vacuum.
I feel like I was cheated.
Yeah, I had a flashback of being in my first electrotechnology class in college years ago, and the instructor was saying, you know, copper is very lossy. And I'm like, but it's the best conductor besides silver and gold.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, well, sometimes the best way to send a signal is through the air or through a vacuum. And I'm like,
it makes me think it makes me think of Hyperloop pods, right?
But the real question is that why guitar amps should be made with tubes?
Oh, there's the musician coming out with you.
Is that why vacuum tubes are better?
I don't know. Well, speaking of music and vacuum tubes, that reminds me. So now I want to kind of move into what I think of is the year in rap. And lucky for our listeners, we're not going to break into song right now and do a rap. But
that would be horrible.
That would be so bad. Although, I don't know, Ben. You could maybe pull it out. I was thinking about, as we talk about the year in rap and in relation to the music thing, that Altium has launched something new that I'm super excited about and I want to share with our listeners called Altium Stories. And I am a sucker. I think all people like good stories, right?
Yeah.
So we have started a new sort of video series that just tells your stories, right? People that are designing boards for something super cool or unique, and they're going out and just shooting their engineering story, like how they came up with this idea. And I think you guys will love it. It's really great. So it has its own channel now. So if you go on YouTube and look for Altium Stories, and one of the stories in there is about Vox.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm just going to let you talk about Vox for a minute because I know that you love Vox amplifiers.
Oh, yeah.
So you can tell me
why Vox
amplifiers are so cool.
Any guitarist knows and recognizes the Vox sound. People typically call it chimey. And Dave in the video, the guy who works at Vox, the engineer there, mentioned that.
Yeah.
It's true. It's a very unique sound. They're famous because of the Beatles. I personally have never owned one because the British-made Vox amps are a little pricey.
Yeah.
They're fully imported. And my older brother had one. So that's what kind of special to me. My older brother was my hero, and he taught me guitar and taught me electronics when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a Vox amp for a long time. So that's my connection with them. But they just have a very unique Class A tube amp circuit that's lossy in all the right ways.
Right. Yeah.
It actually gives really great guitar tone.
And they made, well, I'm going to share the link to this Altium story. Yeah. I'll share the link in the show notes to the Altium Stories page, YouTube channel, as well as the one that is Vox related, yeah, because they made a vintage app where they put all the tubes back in. Right.
Most of their amps are still tube amps.
Oh, they are. Okay.
They are designed with a PCB. And that's, uh-huh, and the mechanical fit and everything is important to them, which is, you know, not to give away the whole video.
Yeah.
That's what they're talking about in the video. But they have a mix of modern. They have the tubes, but they also have some DSP for reverb and, mm-hmm, delay and, mm-hmm, other audio effects as well that guitarists use. So the story... Dave's story resonated with me in particular because, and I had nothing to do with making that video. That was
right,
a completely different project. But it resonated with me because his story is very similar. He was a guitarist, grew up around music, and also became an electrical engineer. And when he was young, was looking at making his own amps and things. And so a lot of people get into design and engineering because they've started with something else and they want to learn more about how it works. They're
right,
curious.
Mm-hmm.
It's like many people I meet who know RF and radio started out as teenage radio hams.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And they just got curious about how the heck is it that we can send signals through space?
It's just amazing. It's amazing to me still.
And so they just learn more and more and they become fantastic engineers. And
yep,
it's that burning curiosity, mm-hmm, that wants to peel back the facade of what the thing that we do and what we use and peel back the cover. Facade's the wrong word because that implies something's fake. It's not fake.
Right.
It's more skin the melon and eat the juice inside.
Right, eat
the juicy fruit inside.
Right, yeah.
And it's good. We all love those stories because we all started out our journey,
yeah,
in some way like that.
I know.
That.
I love these.
Even psychologists, you know.
Stories are just human.
As young people, they're like, far out. People's behavior is really weird and unpredictable and also super predictable if you know.
Right.
If you know about it. And so they get into psychology. No matter what field you're in, this is how we learn.
Right.
We see something and we like, I got to peel back the layers on that. So these stories are wonderful because we get to see facets of what our customers and fellow peers in the industry are doing.
I think it's a real celebration just of the engineering craft.
Yeah.
And these stories, I think there's 5 or 6 out now, but they're cranking these out like one every couple of weeks, I think, right now. But so we've done, you know, the one on Vox. We did Piano Arc, which is
another
really
musical
fun.
One.
Another musical one, which is 360-degree piano that came to Altium Live in San Diego and is played by a Lady Gaga's pianist. He's actually a partner in the company. Then one came out, which was, it's a sensory guided meditation device called Core Wellness. There's one about robotics. So anyways, I over time, this is going to cover the full gamut of people's interests. So anyways, highly, you know, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah, whatever your holiday is. I think that you'll really enjoy digging into these maybe when you
absolutely
have some time off. So I will share the links below, I promise. Another fun year-end thing is that you mentioned to me is holiday gifts for engineers. Now
yes,
we're going into fun land.
Oh my gosh.
So tell our listeners about a recent blog that we published.
Yeah. One of our users, Mark Harris, wrote a blog that's actually published on our blog site. And if you haven't subscribed to the blog, you absolutely should, because we're getting more and more cool articles from people outside of Altium who are just really passionate about what they do.
Yep.
Kind of like the stories, but written form, yes, maybe. So Mark Harris wrote this cool blog, and he, some people will notice, a few weeks ago on the Lounge Forum, he posted a question. Hey, I'm wanting to write an article about gift ideas for nerds and engineers. And it, we all have these.
Did it light up? Did it light up? Did a lot of people?
I got on there and offered some suggestions, but a bunch of people replied. And it's kind of interesting because engineers and PCB designers, we do not think about regular. you ask most people out there, what if I could buy you something for Christmas, you know, what would it be? And they'd think,
An oscilloscope.
They'd think a new jacket. Or ties, or, you know, jewelry.
Right.
Or bring some fantastic meal. And we are all into those things, of course, because we're humans. But it lit up with oscilloscopes and test equipment. And for me, it's technology for guitar. So I named a couple of items that would be really like digital signal processing tools that I use for guitar, which are awesome. Yeah. I'll share that in the link below too.
It's really fun. So we're going to share the holiday gifts from Mark Harris. There were some really fun. I don't think it was in Mark's blog. I think I probably clicked through something and, you know, it took me off someplace else.
Yeah.
There's one
gift I think we could all really use.
What?
And that's time.
Yeah, time.
I could just have the time to explore more of these things and learn and do more creative work.
I know.
We could all use that.
Yeah, we could all use that.
And so that's why we have holidays, I think. So we get a day off to enjoy family, spend time with family and friends.
Right.
And, tinker.
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 T-I-N-K-A, Tinka. also, happy holidays to you. All the Altium Live. Altium Live was fabulous if you didn't have a chance to go, both in San Diego and in Frankfurt. And, you know, our special gift to you is that all those sessions are online available now. We'll also share those in the show notes.
Those are excellent.
My gosh, you want to drink from the fire hose.
Yes.
Just, you know, when you have some time off, just go down that hole, because
there's all sorts of really amazing classes.
Yeah.
Derek Jackson's one had a standing room only in the room. He was teaching how to use the SPICE simulation in Altium Designer.
I don't know if
John Watson had a series on, his series, but you're referring
management.
Yes, and this is something that everybody should care about. So there's a bunch of stuff.
Yep. I just don't know if Derek's is up there, because I don't know if the University Day classes are up there. But if they're not, they'll probably end up on our YouTube. I'll find it anyways. I'll make it easier for you to find it. Yeah. Okay. Well. To our listeners, I just want to say thank you so much for making this a great year for the On Track podcast. We love running into you guys everywhere we go, and thank you for your kind comments. Again, we always want to hear from you, what you want to learn. We have now passed over 40,000 downloads.
That's great.
So because you are listening and contributing, we get to keep doing this. So thank you so much. And lastly, wrapping up, Ben, I hope this is going to be short, but it may not be. We're ending a decade now, right? We're crossing that line. We're going into 2020. What do you see maybe over the next year or two, like looking forward for PCB designers? What are some trends you see that we might be heading towards as we, you know, head out of this decade and into the next one?
I think routing boards is going to keep getting easier and faster, and there will be more long-awaited automation coming. That the role of the PCB designer will change, but it won't disappear. I think there is still a pressing need for more people to enter this profession.
Absolutely.
And so what I'm hoping is we get an influx of younger people. Mm-hmm. And those people will do far more mixed signal and have to broaden their skill set. They'll have to broaden.
Oh my gosh. They have to be more holistic than any previous generations of engineers. I think they have to do a little software, hardware, a little mechanical, embedded systems. They're going to have to touch a little bit of everything. But I'm really, really inspired by all the teams that I see because they're doing that.
That's true. And I don't think PCB design or PCB technology is going anywhere. It's a huge industry and it has a lot of momentum. It will be disrupted way down the future, but not for a long time. There's still more we can get out of this technology, and we're going to keep doing more and more with it. I think boards are going to find themselves into more bizarre places. We're already seeing them in wearable technology. Yep. I think more of that kind of human, let's say, augmented reality. Mm-hmm. And the next phase of augmented reality is augmented human. We're already seeing this with Sarcos. You know, Tom Holbrook, one of our long-time customers, is a fantastic PCB engineer for a robotics company.
This Sarcos robot looks like...
So they're building those exoskeletons.
Exoskeletons that look like they're from Alien or from The Matrix or something, right?
Yeah.
Where you can pick up extremely heavy objects. Yes. But you're in this...
But you still need the finesse of a human right there with it who can have that mm-hmm. human interaction connection, but also tactile feedback and be right there in it, mm-hmm. controlling it. And that more and more is going to be... Those sorts of technologies are going to be more and more necessary for the future. And I think there's going to be a lot more in food production as well.
Interesting.
More electronics and more boards designed for electronics in precision agriculture. Precision agriculture is already a very large field. Mm-hmm. But to feed all of us as the population just keeps growing is a big problem, but it's a solvable problem, at least for the next 50-100 years, I think. And so board technology is going to find a lot more application in that as well.
Well, and I'm excited, as an Altium employee to see our move towards the cloud too. I think that's gonna be a game changer for engineers being able to collaborate and go work kind of cross-functionally with Altium 365. And for those that can use cloud, I think it's going to be an enabler. Like, I don't know where we're going, quite frankly. But I don't think AI is going to destroy the PCB designer. I don't see it.
No, it's going to give them more jobs to do as they have to design bigger, faster computers for doing AI.
That's a good
point. And those computers, they're the secret ones.
Right? Yeah, right? Yeah. Well, I think that's all the time we have for today, but this has been so fun. To our listeners, I hope you've enjoyed this conversation between Ben Jordan and I. I know we've had a blast. We hope you've enjoyed listening to
it. Yes.
So again, we wanna thank you for making Altium the number one PCB tool by seat count in the world. And we wanna thank you for making this the number one podcast on PCB design. And please give us a shout out. We're always eager to learn about you and about what you want to learn. So until next time, we want to wish you happy holidays and happy New Year's. And thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Judy.
Until next year, remember to always stay on track.